This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight...
There is a belief that the incoming administration seems to have that there is a trade-off between environmental management and economic growth, and in particular climate action and economic development. The evidence is overwhelming that this is not the case.
That's World Resources Institute CEO and President Andrew Steer. He says evidence shows many Americans want action on climate change. Details coming up. Also, a former South Sudanese child soldier has received one of Australia's highest civic awards. And in Zimbabwe, a professional hunter and safari guide have been acquitted of charges regarding the illegal hunting and killing of Cecil the lion. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, American voters elected Donald Trump as the country's next president. After a long, bitter, and often divisive race for the White House, work began on the clean transfer of power, a bedrock principle of American democracy. VOA's Chris Simpkins has more on the story.
Black lives matter! Black lives matter!
The election is over, but in a deeply divided country, Donald Trump's defeat of Hillary Clinton came with an outpouring of raw opinions outside the White House.
The white nationalism that this man, Donald Trump, has inspired within my country?
Trump, I think he's an awesome guy. I think he's the American dream personified.
Washington, D.C., you're fired.
Following a bruising political contest, President-elect Donald Trump sought to pave the way for reuniting the country.
We owe her a major debt of gratitude for her service to our country. I say it is time for us to come together as one united people.
In defeat, Hillary Clinton offered to work with Trump to end partisan divides as part of the transition.
Our constitutional democracy enshrines the peaceful transfer of power. And we don't just respect that, we cherish it.
Now the Obama administration will work together with Trump's transition team to hire government personnel, including selecting a new cabinet to run the country. President Obama offered his cooperation to ensure the peaceful transfer of power.
We are now all rooting for his success in uniting and leading the country. The peaceful transition of power is one of the hallmarks of our democracy. And over the next few months, we are going to show that to the world.
Before the election, Trump had refused to say whether he would accept the results, casting doubt on a smooth transition. Political analyst Norman Eisen with the Brookings Institution in Washington says President-elect Trump needs to deliver unifying messages before he takes office.
The speech that he gave last night was all he can do as a first step to send a sense of continuity, of acceptance, of bipartisanship.
I love this country.
The presidential transition process culminates January 20th with the ceremonial inauguration marking the beginning of the Trump presidency. Chris Simpkins, VOA News, Washington.
President-elect Donald Trump has described climate change as a hoax, but many are trying to change his mind. They want Mr. Trump to continue U.S. policies to mitigate the effects of rising global temperatures and see clean energy as a business opportunity. VOA's Jody Capua reports.
World Resources Institute CEO and President Andrew Steer says evidence shows many Americans want action on climate change, but does Donald Trump?
There is a belief that the incoming administration seems to have that there is a trade-off between environmental management and economic growth, and in particular climate action and economic development. The evidence is overwhelming that this is not the case.
In fact, Steer says it's just the opposite.
A great deal of work has been done in the last few years to demonstrate that actually, if you want robust, inclusive growth, you have to act on climate change. So the evidence is overwhelming in that regard. And what we're going to hope is that over time, this evidence will become clear to the incoming administration.
He says even if you have doubts about climate change, taking action pays off.
If you want a healthy society and economy, you want cities that are greener and cleaner and less congested and more competitive. And it turns out if you do that, you not only have a better economy and a more inclusive economy, but you actually also have an economy that is lower carbon. And exactly the same thing applies to rural space as well.
He adds that businesses and local governments are central players in climate change adaptation and mitigation. Steer says 200 major corporations have signed on to what's called science-based targets. Also lobbying the incoming Trump administration is retired Marine Corps Brigadier General Stephen Cheney. He's now CEO of the nonpartisan American Security Project. Cheney says climate change is a security issue.
We understand what climate change has done to disaster weather. Just look at Typhoon Haiyan, for instance, of which the United States had the major reaction to that. We sent 12,000 soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines down to the Philippines to assist in cleanup of that event. Superstorm Sandy, of course, which was a huge event here, and that's the catastrophic side of the house. We know that climate change is contributing to instability all over the world, to include Arab Spring and the Syrian conflict.
General Cheney says rising sea levels are affecting the U.S. military.
Our own bases and stations here in the United States and several overseas are literally going underwater. Naval Air Station Norfolk is about a meter above water level. We know the piers at the naval station there are going underwater. We have a big station in Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean. That's going underwater. So from the military perspective, the senior military folks understand the impact of climate change. Now, the hard part of this, of course, is going to be getting that message to continue with the next administration.
He says over 70 countries have now included climate change in their national security strategies. Nigel Topping is CEO of We Mean Business, a coalition of thousands of international business firms working on climate change. He says $8 trillion will be invested in renewable energy between now and 2040. Topping says business played a major role last year in achieving the historic Paris Climate Agreement.
We're seeing international businesses from all regions, many of them American, committing to the full transition, the full energy transition described in the Paris Agreement. And of course, it will affect the hundreds of thousands of employees of those companies, but also all their suppliers. Similarly, we're seeing many, many companies committing to 100% renewable energy, companies like General Motors, Microsoft, Johnson & Johnson, and Apple, and again, their supply chains.
Topping says the U.S. auto industry could play a major role on the world market by being a major producer of electric cars. He cites Tesla Motors as an example, but says China is committed to building many more electric vehicles. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Arab public opinion was surprised by the victory of Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump in this week's U.S. elections. Polls show that more than 60% of Arabs surveyed said they preferred Democratic Party candidate Hillary Clinton. Khalil Jashan is the president of the Arab Center in Washington. Reporter Mohammed El-Shinawi asked him if the new administration will introduce changes in U.S. policy towards the Middle East.
President-elect has not really articulated any clear positions or a policy paper on his policies in the Middle East. There were some pieces and bits during the campaign with regards to his desire to emphasize the fight against ISIS, to strengthen alliances with Arab allies to do so. One mention of the Arab-Israeli conflict earlier in the campaign that seems he retracted at a later stage. So there isn't enough substance to say that. But my anticipation is, yes, he does have to undergo some changes once he gets in his office. and is confronted by the numerous conflicts in the region that impact directly on U.S. National interest that he will have to intervene. He might want to exclude the U.S. from additional conflicts in the region, but frankly, the region is not going to leave him alone.
Where did the Obama administration go wrong in the Middle East?
The Obama administration, frankly, went wrong from day one in the Middle East. It's an administration that receives an A-plus in good intentions and F-minus in basically execution. It did not manage to translate the good intentions that were advocated early in the first term of the administration, you know, going back to the Cairo speech, going back to the Ankara speech, capturing the imagination of people in the Middle East, Arabs and Muslims alike, and yet failing to translate that into a political program and incorporate it into U.S. foreign policy. It is that frustration with the Obama policy that is the number one on my list of shortcomings on the part of the Obama administration.
How do you expect the reactions in the Middle East to Trump's victory?
I think there will be frustration, almost similar to the frustrations of probably Arab and Muslim Americans in this country, in the sense that in public opinion surveys conducted before the elections, it was clearly the choice of the Arab street in the Arab world was support for Hillary Clinton as a more recognized politician, a more conventional politician who was more balanced on some issues pertaining both domestically, let's say, to immigration issues, internationally in terms of policy to combat ISIS, the situation in Syria, and so on. So she was not necessarily the perfect candidate, but Hillary Clinton was the choice, at least in the public opinion survey that we at the Arab Center conducted a couple of weeks ago in 9 Arab countries, including the most popular of Arab countries like Egypt and Saudi Arabia and Algeria and so on. 60%, two-thirds of Arabs preferred Hillary Clinton. So I think they are probably right now disappointed in the results.
What do you make of the fact that the Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi was the first foreign leader to congratulate President-elect Donald Trump?
It's not surprising because Trump did use President Sisi's name in the campaign as an example of unappreciated allies alienated by the Obama administration and by Secretary Clinton. In other words, he used President Sisi as a stick to hit Obama on the head for his failure. And I have a feeling President Sisi is trying to reciprocate, assuming that he is now a persona grata in Washington compared to the Obama administration, somewhat negligence of developing warmer relations with him. But I think the Egyptian government, if that's the case, is misinterpreting Trump's use of President Sisi as a campaign, if you will, prop versus real genuine feelings toward him.
That was Khalil Jashan, president of the Arab Center in Washington. He was speaking to reporter Mohammed El-Shinawi. You were listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Nineteen past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. After Americans' voters elected Donald Trump as the country's next president, work has begun on the clean transfer of power, a bedrock principle of American democracy. And even though President-elect Donald Trump has described climate change as a hoax, many are trying to change his mind. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. In Zimbabwe, a professional hunter and safari guide has been acquitted of charges regarding the illegal hunting and killing of Cecil the lion. Cecil was popular with tourists and was wearing a GPS collar as part of a research project. A Harare court dropped charges against Theo Bronkhorst, who led an American hunter onto private land adjacent to Hwange National Park to kill Cecil. The court upheld Bronkhorst's claim that his actions were not a chargeable offense. Zimbabwe offers permits to hunters for the limited killings of certain species. Last year, the government declined to charge Bronkhorst's U.S. client, an amateur wild game hunter. The American faced international criticism and had to temporarily close his dental practice. A former South Sudanese child soldier has received one of Australia's highest civic awards. Deng Adut has been named the 2017 News South Wales Australian of the Year and is now a contender for a prestigious national award. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Deng Adut has been recognised for helping to combat discrimination and assisting juvenile offenders. The 33-year-old former refugee, who's a successful criminal lawyer helping Sudanese migrants, has been named New South Wales Australian of the Year. As a young child, he was made to fight for Sudan's People's Liberation Army. He endured torture, witnessed atrocities, and was shot in the back. He told VOA his ordeal began when he was kidnapped from his mother at the age of six.
The reality started hitting you because there were thousands of other kids that were just, you know, sleeping on the ground, on the floor, waiting for the orders to be given so that they can march to Ethiopia. And we traveled toward Ethiopia. We had suffered a lot of thirst. We didn't have water for days. We also were ambushed by another tribal group called Murule at the time.
Adut was eventually rescued and smuggled to Kenya with the help of the United Nations and arrived as a refugee in Australia in 1988. He taught himself to read English as a teenager and lived in his car while studying law at university in Sydney. He plans to become a barrister, his ambition fueled by an insatiable desire to learn.
I'm hungry. I've been deprived for a long, long time. Even my belly, which used to be the biggest belly in town when I was a kid, has shrunk to the point that I don't even eat lunch, I don't even eat breakfast, I only eat dinner. So what idea of learning to me is that hunger in me is not about food anymore.
The award in New South Wales puts the former child soldier in the running for the title of Australian of the Year, the nation's most coveted civic honour, which will be announced on January 25. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Based on a true story, the movie Loving offers an intimate portrait of Richard and Mildred Loving, a white man and a black woman who defied the segregation laws of their native Virginia in 1957 and were married in neighboring Washington, D.C. The civil rights events that unfolded in later years changed America. VOA's Penelope Palou spoke with the filmmaker and the lead actors in this dramatized landmark story.
I'm gonna build you a house right here. Our house. Would you marry me?
Richard and Mildred get married in the nation's capital.
I now pronounce you husband and wife.
But their union is illegal under the Racial Integrity Act of Virginia, where they live.
In here?
Richard!
What you doing in bed with that woman?
I'm his wife.
They are arrested, accused, and found guilty.
Richard Perry Loving, being a white person, and Mildred Jeter, being a colored person, did unlawfully cohabitate as man and wife.
The couple has to leave Virginia or face prison. In 1958, they moved to Washington, D.C., away from friends and family. 5 years later, in 1963, inspired by the civil rights movement, Mildred writes to U.S. Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy asking for help. She is then contacted by the Washington chapter of the American Civil Liberties Union.
I believe this is a court battle that could go all the way to the Supreme Court.
Filmmaker Jeff Nichols relied on historical footage and an in-depth documentary about the couple.
I can take care of you.
I know that.
But the film's power lies in the way Nichols portrays a nuanced, deep love between two people whose only desire is to live a life together. In 1967, the Supreme Court ruled in their favor. Loving versus Virginia became a landmark case that overturned miscegenation laws around the country. At the recently inaugurated African American Museum in Washington, D.C., Jeff Nichols spoke to VOA about the Oscar buzz his film has generated.
It's flattering and humbling, but what's important here is the story we're trying to tell, Richard and Mildred's story. I didn't know about it in 2012 when I first heard about it, and that's shameful. This is a fundamental part of our American history.
Actress Ruth Negga pours her heart into the character of Mildred. Her soulful performance has earned her acclaim. She told VOA what really inspired her to play the reluctant activist was her admiration for her character's immense courage.
How do we find out who we are, really? And usually it's when we're in peril or when we are forced to find out who we are. You know, and I think that's when our true colors show, and it's when we discover our grit and our integrity.
Asked if a film such as Loving could speak to wide audiences in America's current climate of political polarization, Joel Edgerton, who plays Richard Loving, told VOA.
We keep running into the same problems. They'll always be there. And so it's always good to have new stories and sometimes gentle stories that allow us to take a walk, an empathetic walk in someone else's shoes. And I think it's a very special film that will resonate.
Is there anything you'd like me to say to them? And by them, I mean the Supreme Court justices of the United States?
Tell the judge I love my wife.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Washington.
The International Office for Migration is rescuing about 150 Ethiopian migrants trapped in Yemen's civil war. IOM officials say a chartered vessel containing 118 unaccompanied children and 31 women is expected to arrive in Djibouti today. It's the first of several planned evacuations from Yemen funded by Germany, the United Kingdom, and the United States. Hundreds of Ethiopians have been stranded by the Yemen conflict. At least 25 have died. Many were being held in a prison in the city of El Hodeida. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
With your ears on Music Time in Africa, your connection to the best Pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This one, yeah, yeah. This one, yeah, yeah.
Every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.